Welcome, you're listening to the Kraz Files podcast. Today we are doing a special podcast with Dr. Rima Labo on vaccines and autism. An inside job. Folks can get this podcast from iTunes and podomatic.com, but I suggest you go to our website, krazfiles.com, always C-R-A-Z-Z. Lots of our older podcasts are up there as well, in the podcast section. Plenty of news links going up every day, so keep checking it out. And thanks for listening to our shows. Okay, we're ready to go, Dr. Rima, and doing a special podcast today on vaccines and inside job with you. We've been wanting to do that for a while, so very interesting. And also the England hypothesis on vaccines and autism. So I'm going to go through that with you today and give you the floor, but start us off wherever you would like to. Get your site information out. And lead us where you would like to on this issue, because it's very important.
Thank you so much, Adam. It is always such a pleasure to be with you and to talk to you. And that's where I'd like to start, that I think you're doing wonderful work. And I think the opening of awareness that you're bringing forward is absolutely essential. So I'm very pleased to be in dialogue with you and share information and learn from you. I am, as your listeners probably know, the Natural Solutions Foundation's medical director. And that means that I was trained in the allopathic form of medicine. And I realized early on that it was nonsense, that it was toxic, that it was well-organized, but that it was well-organized like a cult, because that's exactly what it is. It's a cult of belief in which you are, in which you are intended to surrender your rational thought so that the irrational beliefs of the system permeate your thoughts, your actions, and your decisions. And when you think about doctors who may be well-intentioned, but when you think about doctors making irrational decisions and having irrational thoughts, but taking care of your body and the bodies of those you love, including your children, the phrase, be afraid, be very afraid, comes to mind. I think you should be afraid. Now, medicine is permeated with illusions and with bad ideas, with poor science, with make-believe science, and with bought and paid for pseudoscience. And one of the worst and most durable bad ideas is vaccination. Vaccination was born in pus and deceit, and it's only gotten worse. What do I mean by that? Edward Jenner was not a physician. He bought his medical license, which back then was just as illegal as it is now. He paid £25 sterling for it from the University of Edinburgh. And he was not a scientist. He would decide what the results of his, quote, experiments were going to be. And he published the results of the experiments before he carried out the experiments, if he did carry out the experiments. He had taken the idea, he had taken the idea from an earlier body of knowledge brought back from Turkey that diseases could be prevented by exposing people to those diseases through breaking the skin, and that doesn't always work. And he turned it into a myth. And the myth is, if I take a bit of pus from the cowpox lesion of somebody, it will somehow prevent smallpox if I stick it into another person. Couple of problems here. One, there is no such thing as cowpox. What he was dipping his needle into before putting it into other people was the stage two open pus-filled syphilitic sores of people who were infected with a highly communicable disease that was raging through Europe at the time, syphilis. Second thing is that when the British government actually enforced the laws that they had passed, that every child had to be injected or inoculated against smallpox, the incidence of smallpox went up 275%. In addition to which, in the tropics where they didn't have syphilis, they used the open pus-filled sores of people with leprosy. And what was happening was that wherever the British Empire planted its flag and inoculated the people subject to it, they spread horrendous disease. They spread smallpox, they spread syphilis, and they spread leprosy. Now, by about 1853, the British Parliament was getting so many complaints of perfectly healthy children dying of introduced syphilis, dying very quickly and dying very horribly, that they decided to convene a blue ribbon panel of inquiry. A two-year panel was carried forth. And at the end of that, they discovered, and this is public documentation, by the way, they discovered that they had made a dreadful mistake, that Jenner was a mountebank, that inoculation didn't work, that they had killed, maimed, wounded, harmed a vast number of people, of their own people and others, and they had a quandary. Okay, what do we do about this? Do we fess up to the British public and allow us how we made a terrible, terrible mistake and this could damage our careers, or do we behave as politicians behave across the timeline and around the world and cover up our very, very, very bad decisions and pretend that it didn't happen that way? Well, of course, they chose the second. Now, in those days, Edward Jenner received a stipend from a grateful government of £10,000 sterling a year, which was an inconceivable amount of money. So the British Parliament, as part of their whitewash, doubled his stipend until he should die to £20,000 sterling a year. I don't know what that would be in modern dollars. Maybe it would be, I don't know, $90 million. I can't imagine how much money it is. Anyhow, with that, the entire fraudulent and deceitful area of vaccination was propelled forward as something that was glorious and respectable and useful, and the money began to roll in. Now, we have to fast forward to Germany. Now, before the Second World War, during the reign of Kaiser Wilhelm, eugenics was introduced to Germany. It was introduced by John D. Rockefeller, the same man who owned and controlled the world's output of petroleum. John D. Rockefeller was convinced in error that the internal combustion engine which powers our airplanes and our cars and trucks and so on, would never amount to much. It would never become widespread enough to consume his world control of, or to consume the oil that his control of the oil production of the world was allowing him to produce. So he wanted another stream of consumption. He sent his agents to Europe, and they came back and they said, hey, boss, listen, there's this new industry called the pharmaceutical industry. And the pharmaceutical industry makes rearrangements of carbon molecules. It's a flowering of the organic chemistry renaissance explosion that was taking place in the Industrial Revolution times. And they said, you know, they make their drugs from the petroleum product that's left at the bottom of a separation tower, a cracking tower in the petroleum industry, this gunk that nobody can use, thick, gluey tar. They said, hey, boss, why don't you buy up the pharmaceutical industry and then you can control that? And John D. Rockefeller said, righto. And he did. He bought the controlling interests of the pharmaceutical industry of Europe, which was the pharmaceutical industry of the world. Then he said, okay, now I got to get somebody to distribute this stuff because nobody in their right minds would want these drugs because they're caustic and they're dangerous and they're toxic and they don't work nearly as well as homeopathy and osteopathy and chiropractic and herbalism and diet and exercise and so on. And he knew that. By the way, until the day he died at 94, he used nothing other than homeopathic remedies. That's rather interesting. Anyway, the story of how he created allopathic medicine is now pretty widely known. He used money, influence, deceit, and the propaganda brilliance of Edward Bernays, Sigmund Freud's nephew, to create a belief system in which people no longer believed that they knew anything about their bodies, and to create a legal system in which everybody else who was practicing health care was given a choice to either surrender their licenses, because homeopaths and osteopaths and chiropractors and herbalists and everybody else was licensed, they were either given a choice to surrender their licenses or to go to jail. Well, most people made the obvious choice. And then the only people left standing were the white coat guys, and they were guys, not guys and gals, and the American public, which had been taught to believe that it no longer knew anything about its own body or need or health, was taught that the guys in the white coat knew everything about their body and health. And it was a concerted and brilliant public relations deceit campaign. Well, Rockefeller was very, very interested in vaccines. And when President Teddy Roosevelt, walk softly and carry a big stick, should really be walk softly and carry a big syringe. Because Teddy Roosevelt, as President of the United States, decided that he needed a biological weapon with which he could subdue everybody that got in his way. He was quite an imperialist. And so Rockefeller turned his pharmaceutical industry to the project of creating a biological weapon, and they came up with vaccines, perfect delivery system, convince people it's for their good, and kill them. Now, the great Spanish flu of 1918 was actually a Rockefeller invention. They didn't know as much about the immune system as we do now, so they were a little bit clumsier and kludgier. But what they did was take a vaccine with things that would make you sick in it. Of course, they didn't know about viruses, but they knew about things that would make you sick. And they reproduced that in eggs and so on, And then they filtered it a little bit, not too much, and they added all kinds of horrible stuff, and they injected it into a group of soldiers in Kansas, in fact, Manhattan, Kansas. And then they sent these soldiers, this is during World War I, of course, they sent these soldiers to New York City to go on leave. And then they put them in a troop ship where they were not allowed up on deck, and they were below decks, breathing stale air, eating pretty wretched food, terribly sick, terribly stressed. And they got to the England, which was not the UK then. I was stumbling over whether to call it the UK. They got to England, and they were taken out, and they were exposed to poison gas as part of their, quote, training, with gas masks that actually leaked a little bit, which, of course, made them vilely sick. Well, what they were doing was creating an environment in which the viruses, which they had not identified as existing yet, but whatever it was that made people sick, would get stronger. In other words, the viruses would mutate. And then they sent these folks out. And, of course, they spread this newly virulent virus. And that's how we got the Spanish flu in New York and in the European continent. And this is an interesting side note, Eli Lilly had patented aspirin. Nobody knew how it worked, but it certainly did make fevers go away. And when young, healthy people, mothers, workers, teachers, factory workers, soldiers, when they got sick, they couldn't afford to go to bed and be sick with the flu, so they took aspirin. It suppressed their fevers and their aches, and 2 weeks later, their lungs filled up with blood, and they drowned in their own fluids within hours, hemorrhaging wildly as they went. That was the horror of the Spanish flu, and we now know that it was because aspirin suppressed the fever that the body was trying to mount in order to kill the virus, because viruses are not very heat stable. And so without that, people got over the immediate symptoms. The viruses kept on replicating without the immune system being able to do much about it until finally they overwhelmed the body and people died not of liquid in their lungs or blood in their lungs. They died of what caused it, which is a cytokine storm. Well, that's one of the important pieces to understand, that vaccines came from lies and deceit. They were immediately weaponized very early on, and they don't do any good, but oh my, they do produce money. So vaccines began to be produced for this and that and the other thing, and the pseudoscience saying that they worked was very, very popular among the fiction writers who publish in the medical journals. And medical journals always have been corrupt entities. They are corrupted by the fact that they have to survive, and therefore they have to raise money, and therefore they have to take ads, and therefore the pharmaceutical companies which place the ads own the content. It's gotten particularly egregious lately, but it's always been a corrupted system. And why do we have such high reverence and such high respect for pharmaceutical-controlled, supposed peer-reviewed medical journals? Because of propaganda. They're tools of basically psychological operations, and they misinform doctors and they misinform patients for the benefit of the people who make money, the drug companies. So and we could go on and on about that. So now we have the swine flu epidemic of 1976 in the United States, in which President Reagan announced that everybody was going to be vaccinated against the swine flu. People started dying. They started getting very, very ill, and large numbers of people developed something called Guillain-Barré. Now, if you look at the symptoms of Guillain-Barré, this is a post-vaccine injury which can kill you, you see that the symptoms are absolutely identical to polio. But you can't call it polio because you can't say you gave people polio, can you? And what happened was that they gave it a new name, just as they have given polio a new name around the world. They call it non-polio acute flaccid paralysis. And just as the CDC says on its website that the principal cause of polio in the world today is polio vaccination. And oh, by the way, measles vaccination causes measles, and the flu vaccination causes the flu. And each vaccine causes either symptoms that are expressed and can be seen, or subclinical, that is to say, hidden symptoms. And anybody who is vaccinated against a viral disease or a bacterial disease becomes a dissemination vehicle for that disease. When you get vaccinated against the measles, you are now a danger to unvaccinated and vulnerable people, because for at least 21 days, you will be shedding the altered and newly virulent measles virus. Understand that everything you think you know about vaccines has to be stood on its head. The unvaccinated are no danger to anybody. The vaccinated are a danger. And some people, this is demonstrably clearly shown, some people go on shedding for years and years and years with no symptoms for themselves. Well, anyway, the vaccines have terribly dangerous things in them besides the bacteria and the viruses, besides the egg protein and the fetal cell protein and squalene and aluminum and polysorbate 80, which is an infertility agent, and fluoride and monosodium glutamate, which is a neurotoxin. The vaccines have something in them called mercury. And the mercury got there because in about 1922, after John D. Rockefeller had supported the formation of the FDA so he could control the regulation of drugs, the FDA said, well, we have this list of things that we don't have to test. They're called generally regarded as safe or GRAS substances. And if something is on the GRAS list, it is grandfathered, so you can put it into food, drug, whatever, without being worried about the FDA saying, oh my goodness, no, you can't put that in. And Eli Lilly, which was making scads and scads of money off its patented product called Thimerosal, which is 49.5% mercury by weight, Eli Lilly said, great, we'll put Thimerosal in every vaccine because it's a, it's an antibiotic. Well, it's not. In fact, fungus is very, very happy in the presence of mercury. So if you want to make sure that you have a good chance to have fungi in your virus or vaccine, put some mercury in. We'll put it there. And the FDA said, well, is it safe? And Eli Lilly said, tell you what, we'll do a little piece of research here. And the FDA said, cool, okay. So Eli Lilly took 11 patients who had meningitis, and they were unconscious, and the prognosis was that they were going to die. This is before antibiotics. This is before people were smart enough to use nanosilver, 10 parts per million, which would surely have brought them back out of their coma caused by the inflammation of infection. And so Eli Lilly took these 11 patients who were all in coma and whose prognosis was death, and they injected Thimerosal into their intravenous lines. All 11 of them died. So Eli Lilly reported back to the FDA, and the FDA accepted the following. Thimerosal is safe because these patients all expired, but they would have died anyway. And the FDA said, okay, that's cool. And they listed thimerosal as a GRAS, or generally regarded as safe, substance. Time went by, and autism became a notable disease. Now, there have always been autistic persons. There have always been people who missed social signals. There have always been people who had difficulty with human connection, with any other kind of connection, cold, wooden people, or people who couldn't talk, or people who had bizarre behaviors like flapping and so on, but they were rare, very, very, very rare. When I was in medical school, there was about one child in 10,000 who was autistic. And you may say, well, perhaps it was because of a reporting difference. And the answer is nope, because I know how I was trained to diagnose autism back then. I graduated in 1970. So we're talking about starting in 1968 when I first started my psychiatry undergraduate training and was introduced to autistic children and worked with them. And I know how the diagnosis is done now. And fundamentally, except for fancier bells and whistle and an iPad instead of a clipboard, it is identical. So there were rare children who were autistic. And there were rare children who had neurological learning disabilities, rare. And there were a few, very, very few children who had cancer, like virtually none. When there was a cancer patient, a pediatric cancer patient in the hospital who didn't have something called a Wilms tumor, which is a kidney tumor that was not so terribly, terribly rare. But any other kind of pediatric cancer patient, all of the students and residents would be called in to that child's room, and the professor would lecture about the child and the child's cancer, and we would all stand there and gawk, golly gee whiz, look, a kid with cancer, wow. Well, it didn't do much for the kid, and it really wasn't very useful education, but it's what they do in medical school. So the point is that it was truly rare. Now, the World Health Organization, which is a private organization supported by the pharmaceutical industry, which is why they never met a vaccine they didn't love, the World Health Organization, which, and it's also a depopulation organization, according to its own documents, the World Health Organization says that any child born after 2000 has a greater than 50% chance of dying before its parents, and that by the year 2020, 50% of children will either have died of cancer or have survived cancer treatment by the time they are 18. Now we have, among the Somalian children who live in Minneapolis who are fully vaccinated, we have one autistic child in 36. How much worse will it get? A lot worse. A professor from MIT this year said that she anticipates that by the year 2025, which is only 10 years from now, one child in two will be autistic. Now, why? Why is this being allowed to happen? And by the way, aluminum is equally horrendous, and there's a lot of aluminum in every vaccine, pretty much. Why is this being allowed to happen? Well, just imagine for a moment that you are the mother of two autistic children whom you adopted in early childhood, and you have raised to be young men who are certainly limited, certainly impaired in every dimension, but who are now capable of performing work tasks in sheltered workshops. And for these young men, that was a very, very huge achievement. Well, the mom happens to be Christina England. And Christina and I, she's a remarkable researcher and writer, and she deals in this area continually. And we were talking, and she was talking about the fact that her sons had more job opportunities now than they had ever had before, because Goldman Sachs was preferentially hiring autistic workers, and Vodafone was preferentially hiring high-functioning autistic workers. And just recently, this is after the conversation, but Microsoft announced that it will be preferentially hiring autistic workers. And Lord Larry Friend of the British House of Parliament announced that the ideal worker in Parliament announced that the ideal worker is, in fact, the autistic worker, because first of all, they can be paid as disabled people, and that's very good for the company's bottom line. Second of all, they are docile, they like routine, they don't make trouble, they don't have enough social skills to band together to form unions or become rebellious, they can be replaced easily by someone else, they're trained to obey very easily, and so on and so on. It was quite a horrifying description of the utility of the damaged. And then Christina said, you know, I think that we're seeing something here that's really important. And she and I talked, and I gave the name, the England hypothesis, to what I'm about to tell you in honor of her decades of dedicated struggle to bring her boys to a place where they could be self-sustaining, even at a minimal level, where they could be useful members of society and feel good about themselves, and to her endless dedication to the honesty that is required to bring this information forward. I said, And that is why it's called the England hypothesis. And here's the England hypothesis. Just suppose that Aldous Huxley, who was a very, very powerful and influential man, he helped to found and to shape the CIA and its mind control programs. He came of a distinguished family of eugenicists and scholars. He and his brother Julian were deeply involved in shaping social policies that have led to much of the chaos that we have now. They foisted the psychedelic revolution on the world using psyops and pretending that Timothy Leary and Alan Watts had been fired from Harvard, when in fact this was all quite well planned in order to make them rebels that people could flock to and would use drugs and so on. Well, the same Aldous Huxley wrote a book which was written in 1931 and published in 1932 called Brave New World, in which there are the alphas, the betas, the gammas, the deltas, and the epsilons. And the delta workers are made into manipulable, infertile, docile, limited, intellectually limited, repetitive, disposable workers. They are made so by manipulation starting in utero. Well, they didn't have uteruses, they were in glass bottles. Starting in bottle-o, if you'll forgive me that that way of saying it. And then when they were decanted, they were further, that is the equivalent of Bourne in his novel, they were further manipulated with chemical toxins that would change the way their brains functioned, limiting them and creating the perfect technician. These were the deltas. And it suddenly occurred to me that we were looking at generations of people who were being turned into deltas with the intentional manipulation of the chemicals and the toxins to which they are being exposed, starting in utero. There is no possible justification under any circumstances for the vaccination of a pregnant woman. We know from very good scientific evidence that the toxins pass the blood-brain barrier, pass the placental barrier and go directly into the brain and cells of the fetus, changing their genetic makeup. And yet the push is on that every pregnant woman has to be medicated against potential postpartum depression. And we know that those drugs are highly toxic to the fetus and the fetus nervous system, and has to be given flu shots and this shot and that shot. And this makes no sense at all. We know that babies are jabbed immediately upon birth with a wildly toxic hepatitis B vaccine. Why? Well, hepatitis B is endemic among 10% of the population in small regions of Asia. And therefore, the public health people said, we must vaccinate every baby born in the world with hepatitis B, a disease which is caused by contact with bodily fluids in sexual encounters or in medical emergency room workers who might cut themselves and come into contact with somebody's infected bodily fluids. Babies are not known to work in emergency rooms or engage in risky sexual practices in the main. And yet we must vaccinate every child. And if the child isn't vaccinated in many countries, we take the child away from the parents until we can jab it full of toxins. Why? Because according to the England hypothesis, and there is a great deal of information that I'll be happy to share with you, that's exactly what's happening. Now, back to 2002, 2003. I had a patient in my practice who was a head of state, not Queen Beatrix and not the Queen of England. I can't tell you who it was because she too, although she's a psychopathic monster, she deserves medical privacy just like everybody else. So one day, she allowed us how it was almost time for the great culling to begin. And that's a story that I've told many times. And I said, culling of what? And she said, useless eaters. I said, what's a useless eater? She said, not what, who. And she explained useless eaters were people who were consuming their non-renewable natural resources. And I said, well, how many of these useless eaters do you want to get rid of? And she said, 90%. And I said, 90% of what? She said, the world's population. And it turns out that she was giving me the party line of the World Health Organization, the United States government, which holds, following the doctrine that was written by Henry Kissinger in 1974 in a secret document called National Security Memorandum 200, that, and I quote, population reduction must be the first priority of United States foreign policy, beginning with the third world. That document was declassified in 1988. I have no idea why, but it was, and it's still part of foreign policy doctrine. So as hard as it was to think about it then, now we can think about it easily because it's come forward in many, many ways. Well, I said to her, okay, I don't get it. Your immense wealth was built on selling large amounts of shit to large numbers of people. So how are you going to maintain your enormous wealth? And she said, we are moving from the mercantile era to the neo-feudal era. There will be the neo-aristocrats at the top, we, and then there will be our servants and servitors below us, and then below them, the technicians. And that requires 10% of the current population of the planet, no more. And now when you put that together with the intentional manipulation and tweaking of the toxic effects of vaccines on the nervous system of virtually every child that they can reach on the planet. And by the way, Bill Gates has been found guilty of crimes against humanity in India for what he and the Gavi Foundation and the World Health Organization have done to the young, poor, impoverished, parasite-ridden peasantry, the girls of India, with the HPV vaccine. Surprise, 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 they've made them infertile. Well, well, who'd have thunk? Now, I have to tell you that in addition to damaging the neurological capability of vast swaths of humanity through the intentional use of toxic repeated doses, I have to tell you that at the same time, the infertility issue is a very, very big one, because in 1974, the same year that Henry Kissinger brought forth his despicable National Security Memorandum 200, that same year, the World Health Organization, for whom the word despicable is far too kind, created a commission at the request of the United Nations and the United States to investigate the creation of vaccines that would make people infertile. And they succeeded. And those vaccines have been used against women and documented now in India, in Kenya, in Brazil, in Guatemala, in Thailand, and in a host of other countries. The vaccine makes the woman produce antibodies against an essential hormone that she needs to ever carry a pregnancy. If she's pregnant, she immediately aborts the pregnancy. She can never get pregnant again. If she's not yet pregnant, she never will get pregnant. And indeed, I have in my possession a memorandum, an internal memorandum from the World Health Organization in Geneva, dated 1985, which states that the smallpox vaccination program, the smallpox eradication program, did not eradicate smallpox, but it did eliminate, and I quote, 150 million excess sub-Saharan Africans. That means black people. How did it do that? By rendering the women who would have had those children and their progeny would have followed therefrom infertile. The smallpox vaccine did not eliminate smallpox. And in fact, if you go to tinyurl.com/Dr. Rima India paper, that's DRRIMA India paper, you can download a paper that I gave, an invitational paper that I gave at the first All India Congress on medical education in February in Mangalore. You can download it and see conclusively that no vaccine has ever eliminated any disease, childhood or otherwise. The only things that have eliminated all of the diseases that that are communicable are clean water, sanitation, hygiene, and an improved diet with sufficient vegetables and protein to support health. Because every childhood and every communicable disease was dropping precipitously before the introduction of the vaccine that supposedly eradicated it. Every one. And most of those diseases actually slowed in their decline after the introduction of the vaccine. Some, like smallpox, jumped up by 275 or more percent. Vaccines prevent nothing except health. Vaccines cure nothing except pharmaceutical financial shortfalls. Vaccines are deceitful. Vaccines are unnecessary. Vaccines are exceedingly dangerous. And one of the things that they produce is dulled, deficient, demented, deltas. Now, I have produced, along with the other good folks in the Natural Solutions Foundation, we have produced a webinar specifically about this issue. It's called Don't Delta Me, Dude, or the way we discussed it was by saying, Don't Delta Me, Dude. And that webinar is available if you go to tinyurl.com/autisminsidejob, because we had a webinar on September 11th, 2013 on the England hypothesis and the documentation of exactly what I'm saying, and it is powerfully documented. And that webinar was called Autism and Inside Job, like 9/11 and Inside Job. And we couldn't get, it was a 3.5 hour webinar. We couldn't get the electronics right. And after about 30 minutes, everybody who was watching it, but not Ralph Fusitola, my co-host and co-trustee, or I, everybody else around the world saw on their computer screen a sign. And the sign said, Natural Solutions Foundation is not hosting a webinar at this time, and they will never host a webinar. We did not see that sign. That was not available to us. So what we did was we went ahead, we recorded the webinar with 3.5 hours of video and abundantly researched ebook, very chunky ebook, and we made it available to people at the link that I just gave you, which is tinyurl.com/autisminsidejob. And oh, by the way, there's another webinar, also 3.5 hours, with another world famous faculty, and that's on shaken baby syndrome. And that's another vaccine tragedy intentionally produced. Please go to tinyurl.com/SBS hoax. That stands for shaken baby syndrome. SBS hoax. And before I stop talking, I'll give you one more link. If you go to tinyurl.com/Mayday Marathon and enter your email there, we will send you an ebook with 16 hours of podcasts with people like Adam Kraz, with people like Vera Scheibner, with people like Sherry Tenpenny, talking about vaccine truth, because God knows you get enough vaccine lies everywhere. And we decided to do a vaccine truth program, and that is completely free. And you'll also get a subscription to our newsletter with that as our gift to you, so that you can be part of the information flow. That's tinyurl.com/Mayday Marathon. Now, other than that, Adam, I have absolutely nothing to say.
Great information, Dr. Rima, as usual, and very important. I'm going to put this up very soon, and I hope that people can really go through what you just said.
Thank you.
I think people are going to need to listen to this a few times, actually.
Probably. And,
yeah, really have a listen to what you just said there. It's very, very important. Extremely.
And I'd like to say two things. One is, anyone can babble out and prattle on, and it doesn't mean that what they say is true. But the things that I've been sharing with you are abundantly documented. This is not imagination. This is not conspiracy theory. This is conspiracy, quite different. And so that, if you do access the webinar and the ebook at autism, tinyurl.com, autism inside job, you will have a chance to see the abundant documentation. I would love to be wrong. It would give me great pleasure
to
stake in this. And there's something else that I would like to do with your permission, Adam, and that is give the links at which people can find more information on this and the other topics that we deal with. If you will go to, first of all, Facebook. Our Facebook page is Natural Solutions Foundation. You can follow me on Twitter, and I hope you do, because I put out a huge amount of information through Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook, my Twitter is at Dr. Dr. Rima, R-I-M-A, Labo, L-A-I-B-O-W, at Dr. Rima Labo. And then our principal website, and we have many others, but our principal website is www.drrima.com. And of course, we have a radio show too called, you'll be surprised, the Dr. Rima Truth Reports. And that's every Monday through Friday, every weekday on VTNradio.com, VTNradio.com. And it's, I think, quite important. We put a tremendous amount of validated information out on a wide variety of topics. So there are a lot of ways to find us, and the point of finding us is that not only do we give you information, but we give you meaningful action items that you can take to flood the decision makers so that they are overwhelmed by the public response. And then here's the dirty little secret that they don't want you to know. They step back every single time we raise our voices in a loud enough unison and say the most essential thing that we can say to these crazy people: don't you dare. And if we do our job properly, they don't dare. They step back.
Great work, Dr. Rima.
Thank you.
Fantastic information today. And I'm going to put this straight up, actually. And people can will be able to get this from crasfiles.com, our website. As I said before, the space is unlimited now on the website, so we can do these extra special shows for people as well, and this will go up on our social media pages. So are you finished there, Dr. Rima? Anything else you would like to add before we plug out of the matrix?
Yes. You may think, well, vaccination doesn't apply to me. I don't have a kid. I don't have a grandchild. You're wrong. You see, Dr. Pan, the pediatrician monster who is pushing the no vaccine exemption bill through the California legislature, Dr. Pan let the cat out of the bag. He said no adult should be able to go into the workspace or into a public space like a store or take transportation or engage in public life if they're not fully vaccinated.
I read that, yeah.
So you see, the deal is we start with kids. And when we get away with that, then we start adding in vaccines. And there is another wrinkle to this. And that is that right now, diseases focus, vaccines focus on diseases. Rabies, hepatitis, typhoid, measles, whatever. But the next generation of vaccines, and there are about 320 vaccines in the pipeline, and the crazy Dr. Paul Offit believes that a baby can take 10,000 vaccines at one time without harm. Well, if being dead is not part of being harmed, he's right. But anyway, there are behavioral vaccines in the pipeline, lots of them. Ones that make it impossible for you to be angry or to be addicted or to say no or to not be docile or to do any of the things that would be necessary to resist being made into a slave. And Bertrand Russell, in 1922, one of the Fabian socialist depopulationist gang, very mathematician, very famously said, through injunction, injection, and indoctrination, the ordinary person will be incapable of independent thought. That's what they have in mind. It's called Agenda 21. And if you're not familiar with Agenda 21, you can go to another of our websites, www.truthaboutagenda21, and you can read Agenda 21 for yourself. There is a free ebook for you to download there. This is the plan, ladies and gentlemen, and making us stupid and infertile and docile and most of us dead is essential to the plan. Now, I have a very stiff-necked position on this. I just think genocide is rude.
Don't delta me, dude. Genocide is rude.
Don't delta me, dude.
Yeah, scary stuff, Dr. Emma. There's so much coming in each day as well. But just before we go, there was one on vaccines being or will be made from human cancer cells. This seemed to be a Food and Drug Administration meeting back in September 2012, and it was a transcript I got here, and these discussions about doing this, and they actually have some of their direct quotes about this, and talking about that these types of vaccines may induce tumours in the vaccine recipients, which is unbelievable. So I'd like to get your quick opinion on that. They're even saying that they're just uncertain about it and that the tumour risk of these vaccines made in the tumour cell lines, it's going to have be a decade or many years before tumours start to appear in human beings after they've been vaccinated with this. What's your theory quickly on that one?
I have several thoughts. First of all, cancer is the most profitable disease ever encountered by the human species. And the last thing in the world that anybody inside this cabal wants to do is get rid of cancer.
This looks like it's going to cause direct tumors in people quite quickly.
Exactly. I mean, what a business model.
Not hiding it anymore, are they?
Well, no, they're not hiding it. And these people are becoming more and more bald-faced. And that's great because we get to catch their drift a little sooner. The CDC admitted that 98 million people in the United States received polio vaccine doses that they knew were contaminated with simian virus 40, which is a leukemia, cancer, prostate cancer, brain cancer, breast cancer, everything cancer producing virus. But they did not ask the manufacturer to filter it because they did not want to burden the manufacturer with a financial expense, even though it would have been less than pennies per dose because it was a simple single-pass filtration. But they didn't want to do that. So instead, they created a worldwide and U.S. Epidemic of leukemia. Very good marketing.
Oh, blood
very,
cancer?
Very good marketing.
Yeah, lots of money in blood cancers, isn't there?
Blood cancers, brain cancers, prostate cancer. Any cancer is good money.
We could we could get our young women now, Dr. Rima, to just chop their body parts off and chop their breasts off because they may get cancer like Angelina does.
Oh, yes.
Chop your breasts off, girls.
Cancer.
Yeah, why does a 14-year-old girl need breasts?
What they don't understand intentionally is that the gene that they're so terrified of is a cancer suppression gene. And what they ought to be doing is doing everything that they can to enhance its function. It's when it stops functioning that you get breast or ovarian cancer.
Yeah, well, it's pointing the bone, isn't it? That's a big thing for the pharmaceutical industry, pointing that bone at people, uh-huh. telling them you are going to get cancer because it's all genetic. So they panic and they go and chop things off. And that's the new norm now. So it's,
now the
staggering.
New norm is getting the new norm is much worse than that.
I know.
The,
I know.
New
it's
norm
a horror movie.
Is transhumanism.
Yeah,
and
I
the
know.
New
yeah.
norm. The new norm also allows these people, if they can tell you what must go into your body, they can tell you that they want your left kidney.
Well, there's transabled as well now, isn't there, where people
and there are transabled,
know, deliberately exactly. cutting themselves and chopping parts off their bodies because they just don't. I've read articles on this where, you know, these people are saying they just don't want their arm on them anymore, their fingers on them anymore. They're not happy unless they're cutting themselves up. This is a terrible way for human beings to be.
There are people who want to be made blind, and this is being
yeah.
normalized so that the alteration of your body becomes someone else's choice.
Yep.
And if you think that this is far-fetched, my friends, you are not keeping up with the news. this is we must draw the line in the sand. The line is, this is my body, I own it.
Yeah, it's just funny. I saw this Angelina Jolie stuff come in, and they really promoted her here, you know, in Australia as being, you know, this princess for all the young girls to look up. You know, you're so brave, Angelina. You're so wonderful. You know, and they're sucking up to this woman. And she's an absolute voodoo doll. She's been cut to pieces, and they're looking up. The young women are looking up to this woman for guidance. It's really staggering. And now you're starting to see this transabled kind of stuff come out, where they're getting off on it. It's you know, it's extremely dark, demonic, and sick stuff. But you know where we're heading as a human race, and we better wake up very, very, very quickly, or it's going to be too late. And
May I suggest an alteration in the sentence, but not the sense of what you just said,
yes.
Adam?
Of course.
You said, it's where we're heading. No, it's where we're being herded.
Yes, that's a better word, much better. Yeah, herded.
Because normal people don't want to cut pieces off themselves. Normal people don't want to inject poisons into their children. Okay, here's an apple, and it's got formaldehyde and polysorbate 80 and gentamicin and mercury and aluminum and. Would you like to give this to your baby? Well, no, of course not. Then why in God's name are you injecting this into your baby? Oh.
It's
because the doctor
me.
Said so?
That's exactly right. I'm stumped. I don't understand it at all. And as we said, they jog and they seem to want to look after their bodies. They're obsessed about their bodies and being healthy. And they, you know, and then they go and do that without even questioning what's going in their child's bodies. You know, just open the arm up. There you go. Jab me. Jab my kid. I will not question God. Because the medical establishment, along with doctors, have really placed them in that place themselves in that system of being God,
well,
haven't they? You
paid,
don't question
they
them.
They paid for the marketing to do that.
Yeah, and the CDC, you don't question them.
Yes, and, you know, I always said, how come I don't have patients who do anything I say and regard me as divine? Maybe because the kind of medicine that I practice requires patients who will think for themselves and take ownership of their own experience and make decisions by themselves or with me that they are willing to stand by. And so there's a certain self-selection, because if I get patients who just want me to be the only brain in the room, I tell them I'm not the doctor for you. But seriously, this notion that the doctor knows your body and you don't know your body is a lot like saying, well, God knows my heart, but I don't. Excuse me? What kind of nonsense is that? You give this agency of your own responsibility over to a creature who is mythical in your mind, whether it's God or whether it's a doctor who is infallible or whatever. That's so childlike, and that's where they want us. Look at the education we receive. Look at the myths we are fed upon and are supposed to grow upon, and in fact we get stunted.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, and we talked about that. We've lost the will to survive, you know. And as you just stated, we should be being our own doctors, really. You know, we should be able to look after ourselves and take matters into our own hands.
But well, we just don't
want to, Dr. Rima. It's well, so lazy it's when it comes to this.
I think it's that they have been taught that that's dangerous, perilous, foolish, and also never, never underestimate the impact of fluoride.
Yeah, you're right there. You have make a good point there. They don't have that trust, do they? It's like it is dangerous to sort of step out into the unknown and take charge of your own health. It's not a hard thing to do, but they worry about it. It's like, well, I'm going to look after my health and eat my fruit and vegetables and live my life this way, but when it comes to vaccines and general health you know, principles, I have to put my life in the hands of a doctor and pharmaceutical companies because, you know, just scared not to do that. So that's a good point you raise and very true. People need to get rid of that fear because it's just fear. And, you know, start taking charge of your own health. You won't believe the results. You just won't need to go to the doctor, really, at the end of the day. You know?
At the end of the day, exactly. There are only, and I, as an allopathic physician in my training, let me say that in my life, for myself and for anybody who comes to me for advice and guidance, I will tell you that there are two places where modern allopathic Western medicine is incomparable. Just two. One is the emergency room, where the risks of what you do are well outweighed by the benefits of what you need to do, of what you hope will happen if you do what you need to do. And the second is the surgical suite, where high tech and drugs are very useful, very dangerous. General anesthesia is not without risks. We have a good friend whose son, who was just about to enter the Chilean medical the Chilean military academy, he needed a surgery, according to them, to correct a deficit that would have made him vulnerable. So he had the surgery under general anesthesia. He had a psychotic episode, and he's been psychotic for the last approximately 6 months because it's a neurotoxin. That's why it makes you unconscious.
That's exactly right. Even they admit they don't know about
it. Because it's poisonous, and his body is not able to detoxify the poison. And it looks very much like he won't be able to go to any school at this point because of the chemical toxicity that he's been exposed to. However, most of the time, people kind of get away with it. So it's the surgical suite and the emergency room. Other than that, why in the world would you entrust your body to somebody who only knows allopathic medicine? What a disastrous and foolish choice.
Yeah, I'd say for people to really do your homework. If you have a good family doctor that's like Dr. Rima, then you are blessed. But it's so hard now, you know. But,
by the way, may I make a point? On Friday of this week, which is 26th of June, and I hope this podcast will go up before that, I will be having as my guest Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, whom many, many people know for her excellent work on vaccines and the truth about vaccines. But we will be, after we talk a little bit about vaccines, we'll be talking about a new approach to maintaining, regaining health, in which the basic underlying cause of a wide number of diseases is addressed with a simple nutritional molecule, and then the body is able to cure the deficit, to return to normal structure and function through this mind-boggling advance in how to restore the body to its normal structure and functioning. That's on the Dr. Rima Truth Reports at vtnradio.com. And I hope that, Adam, you will post that and put it up for people to see. This is spectacularly important.
So important, and you give your body the tools that it needs. It can heal itself, and proper organic minerals, vitamins, fresh, clean water, food, air. It's not hard, Dr. Rima, but most people living on a GMO diet of cereals and grains and non-raw food that's just not fresh, packaged plastic foods. No wonder we're getting so sick, along with the vaccines, fluoridated poisoned water and these things, it's not hard. You give your body what it needs, especially in particular minerals and live enzymes and proper amino acids and these things. Your body can heal quite quickly. It's an amazing thing, our human bodies. Yeah.
Let me tell you what I have for breakfast, if I may. Most days, I take a bunch of organic spinach and I stick it in the blender. And then if I have it, I might stick some microgreens or some spicy lettuce or something in there. I take 2 tablespoons of raw, organic, unfiltered coconut oil. I take an apple. Any kind of apple, as long as it's organic. All of this is organic, of course. I wouldn't put it in my body otherwise. And I put in some filtered pure water without fluoride and without all the other horrible things that water can have. And then I put the cap on and I go, and I've got a spectacular meal. Why do I do that? Because I believe in exactly what you said. Give your body what it needs to not get sick or to heal if there is something wrong. And it will do that. It's delicious. It's very fiber-rich, so it satisfies any hunger that I might have for hours and hours. The only calories of any significance come from one of the best lipids on the planet, organic, unfiltered, cold-processed coconut oil.
It's amazing.
And I have fiber, and I have enzymes that have just spilled out of cells so I can get them, and they're nice and fresh and yummy. And I'm good to go. And I haven't eaten cereal, and I haven't consumed toxins, GMO or otherwise. No pesticides in my food. Now, what's so hard about that? It takes, 6 seconds to go zzzz, and it takes approximately a minute and a half to chunk the stuff in and put it back in the refrigerator, what's left over that I'm not using.
Well, you've got to have your Weet-Bix, Dr. Rima.
Exactly.
Captain Crunch. It's amazing. I'm the same. I do the same things. I couldn't recommend raw coconut oil more to people. And you can also do oil pulling, where you just have the oil in your mouth for 20 minutes and it sucks out toxins. It keeps your teeth from decaying.
It will make
you feel fantastic. Just put a teaspoon of coconut oil in your mouth. Let it dissolve. Swish it around for 20 minutes. It's one of the most amazing things that you will ever do, and it can help remineralize your teeth so you can keep away from the drill and fill dentists, which will keep you on lines with getting root canals and these things, taking out the nerves of your teeth very bad. But easy to do, Dr. Remy. I take therapeutic quality licorice root tea. I haven't had a flu for a couple of years now. I've never felt better. I don't take too much, just a couple a day. But I would recommend licorice root tea for everyone, your vitamin C, all these things, your omega fatty acids, your coconut oil, your vegetables, your apples. As you said, you blend them up, Dr. Emma. You get the skin and the seeds in there as well, the B17.
Not the apple seeds.
Yeah.
You do not use seeds from almost everything else, but not apples. Why?
Too toxic?
Because they do, in fact, contain cyanide.
That's the B17, isn't it?
What?
Is that the B17?
No. It's not the laetril. It's cyanide.
It's a little bit different. Yeah.
And so, it probably won't do too much, but let's say it might just add a little bit of burden to your biochemistry that you don't need. So I just flip the seeds out from an apple. Now, from other things like pears and other fruits, I would just put the seeds in, but not the apple seeds.
There you go, folks. You've heard it from Dr. Rima. Take your apple seeds out.
Yes, and plant them.
Yeah, there you go. Well, not, you can't if you've got GMO apples, Dr. Rima.
But, well, I was thinking, no, this is organic stuff.
Yeah, no, organic and organic apples rock, red apples. I love them. They're very nice. We get a lot of them here, and well worth blending up and drinking. Absolutely, it's not hard. But if you're going to get up and go to McDonald's and eat McMuffins and hamburgers and thick shakes, well, you know, your health's going to suffer, and you're going to get sick easier, you know, and you don't want that. You want to look after your body, don't you, Dr. Rima, in this life? It's so important to be healthy right up until your old age. We can do it. It can be done.
Adam?
Absolutely.
Let me tell your listeners, go to my website. Take a look at the picture there. That's an unretouched recent picture. I'm 71 years old. I'll be 72 in September. I have abundant energy. I take no medications. I have no ills, so I use no pills. And you can say it the other way. I use no pills, so I have no ills. This is normal, healthy aging.
Yeah, this is a very important point now you're bringing up, Dr. Rima, because you're not up here just mouthing off. You are living what you are living what you're preaching, what you're talking about.
I am.
So you are that life. You're not just saying it and doing something else. So you're the proof.
General Burt is 85 years old.
Yeah.
He was skiing when he was 81. It was our first trip to Chile, as a matter of fact, at Portillo. And he didn't even do anything particularly stupid, but he happened to twist the wrong way, and he shattered his hip and his femur. And so we had a very exciting helicopter ride over the tops of the Andes. We were taken to a very fancy hospital here, Clinica Alemana, and he had big surgery. And in the emergency room before the surgery, after they got us off the helicopter, the bilingual doctor said to him, "How old are you?" And he said, 81. And the bilingual doctor said, what drugs are you taking? And General Burt said, "None," which is true. He doesn't have cardiovascular disease or diabetes or anything. He's perfectly healthy. He said, so the doctor thought that this gentleman who was injured so badly might not have understood him. So he raised his voice and he said, "What drugs do you take?" And Bert said, "None." So he turned to me and, screaming at the top of his lungs, he said, "What drugs does he take?" And I said, "None." And he said, "What about heart?" He's yelling at me. "What about heart, diabetes, blood pressure?" I said, "None. I'm his doctor. He doesn't take any drugs." He said, "Oh, but he's 81.
Astonishing. A healthy 81-year-old man. You can't have that. You're meant to be in a hospital somewhere with your knuckles dragging along the ground on drugs. With drool coming out the side of your mouth.
Exactly.
With pills coming out, you know? What are you doing walking around skiing? That's not right, Dr. Rima. Jeez.
That's right. I'm so sorry. I'll try to remember that in the future.
Oh, my God. Going against the protocols of life, Dr. Rima. Upsetting the natural balance, natural laws. My goodness.
Oh, I'm sorry. I won't do that anymore.
Absolutely. Very shocked.
And I've never done it before either.
All right, we will plug out for the day and speak again soon.
Thank you, Adam. It was delightful. I always love talking to you.
Okay, nice to speak with you, and I'll put this up very soon and send you that link. And looking forward to the Sherry Tenpenny talk as well, and I'll put that up on our website.
That'll be something.
Okay, Dr. Rima, truthreports.com and crazfiles.com. Go over there. Thanks,
bye-bye.
Doc. See you soon.